Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the Senate Rules Committee for June 16th. And we have a fairly full agenda, but I'm hoping we can move quickly. So we're going to take these bills in the order that they appear, and we will start by opening a work session on House Bill 3465A. And if you could please turn off your cell phones, Blackberries, Strawberries, and other devices, that would be great because it does interfere with our recording equipment. So, Erin, would you briefly tell us about this bill, and then I'm going to ask Representative Clem if he'd like to come forward.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3465A comes to you from your Environment and Natural Resources Committee without recommendation. You do have an A-12 amendment in front of you. The amendment does replace the measure as currently written. The amendment makes legislative findings relating to working in cow ranches, and then subject to the approval of a master plan by Grant County, allows for development of guest ranch on property and containing approximately 5,000 acres in common ownership located in Grant County. The development may contain up to 575 units of overnight accommodations, including lodging units, cabins, townhomes, and fractional ownership. Requires deed for overnight accommodations that are not lodging, timeshares, or fractional ownership to include deed restrictions that limit use of accommodations to overnight. Authorizes guest ranch to include restaurants, meeting facilities, and other commercial uses. Developed recreational facilities, including tennis courts, spa, equestrian facilities, swimming pool, and bike paths. May not include sites for new residential dwellings unless otherwise permitted under existing law or developed for the use of employees of the guest ranch. Specifies the content of the master plan and conditions for approval by Grant County. Declares emergency is effective upon passage. We did receive a minimal impact statement from Legislative Fiscal Office on the A-12, and a revenue impact statement was issued from the Revenue Office on the -A-12.
Thank you, Erin, for that succinct explanation. And Representative Clem, did you want to come forward?
If you want me to, I think. Just maybe for...
Briefly?
Yeah,
sure. So welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. I don't think we've seen you here before.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Everyone shows up here eventually,
so we're thrilled to see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21, I think soon to be 22, actually, here in Central and East Salem. Also the co-chair of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, which this is a committee bill, as you may notice from the top of it. The bill came out of our committee, went to the House floor, passed, I think, 54-6, and then we had a series of negotiations with Richard Whitman, the governor's natural resource advisor, that resulted then in the -12 amendments that sort of shore up the public process in Grant County that will occur if the bill is to be signed into law. Also removes the pilot projects. And let me just give you a quick history on the genesis. In 2009, the Senate sent a bill to the House Ag Committee that was to renew the sunset for guest ranches. This is a creature of state statute that allows for a cattle ranch where people want to sort of play city slicker to come out, stay overnight, have some lunch, and, you know, play cowboy or cowgirl for a period of time. And after it came to the House Committee, and it was, I think, Senator Farioli's bill, actually, we had some groups say, you know, these aren't really being utilized very well. There's only about 8 of them in the state. They don't seem to be written up in such a way that people want to utilize them. So let's not just renew the sunset for another 8 years. Let's renew the sunset for 2 years and call or ask around the people who have guest ranches what would potentially make it more viable. So we had one respondent to that out of the 8 approved guest ranches, and that's the project called out specifically in 3465. Then we thought, well, maybe some other people will come up with something. So we had 2 generic pilot projects available. Again, there was no actual interest in doing them, but we thought maybe somebody would want to do them, so we left it discretionary for LCDC to do that later if they wanted to. Richard, I think, felt like, well, if nobody's asking, we probably don't need to have that in the bill, and LCDC has a lot of other work to do, so we're taking that out in the -12s. The key thing for me personally, having not been a huge fan of what I would call resorts, whether they are cattle ranches that also have resort features or pure resorts, are when they have just permanent homes and people end up living there full time and they're not about coming and being a tourist and then leaving. They just end up living there and that's their first home. This, as you probably heard in the description, these are all deed restricted where no one can live in these units that would be built. They can only come and stay for a certain period of time and then they leave. So I think by definition they can't become subdivisions that, you know, otherwise may in our land use system be placed in cities. They are what the original intent of the destination resort statute looks like. This case, you get, in my view, as the ag person in the House, at least my caucus, you get the added advantage of helping ag operations have additional income streams by showing off what they do and letting other people participate in what they do. And I think that's also prevalent in House or Senate Bill 960 that's coming over, that is about how do you get more ag tourism going so you bring urban and rural people together around agriculture. And I think having people play city slicker for a little while didn't work without some other amenities, because it's really actually hard work apparently playing city slicker for a while, and then you end up really sore and tired and you want to go get a massage or do something else. And I think that's largely what's going to be tested in this particular bill. This site, the bill calls out a specific site for one pilot project, and the particular site has been an approved guest ranch for some time. There was a story about the people from Germany who came, worked the ranch, and after about 2 days got sick of sleeping on hard cots, eating cold food, started complaining, and when their week was over never came back. And that was really the end of this particular guest ranch. So this is a concept of a particular owner now, but as the bill's written to run with the land, so anybody who owns this particular property, if they want to do this, would have to be subject to all the environmental benefits that are listed in the bill, the findings of Grant County that would need to be made before the master plan could be approved, and also the deed restrictions on any units to never convert them to permanent homes, which is an important part, I think, and the key reason you're not seeing 1,000 friends here to oppose this bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for Representative Clem?
Does he own a necktie?
You may answer that or not as you see fit.
Madam Chairman,
you might be a constituent of mine one.
Is that for the representative or the proponent? Does the representative own the tie? Is that the question?
Okay, we're going to move on. Thanks a lot for bringing us the amendments. Yes, Senator Beyer.
Question, please. Representative, I'm curious. I was looking on page 2 of the dash 12s. Were limitations on the units that you were just addressing. Does the last, I guess it'd be lines 28 and 30, and as they follow on the other page, does that deed restriction to overnight, is that going to overly restrict your fractionals?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Beyer, I do not believe so. I think this language is probably what's borrowed from the section around current guest ranch statute on overnights, and then there's also discussion of overnights versus permanent homes and current destination resort law as well. And we have not had too much of a problem when the intention was to definitely make them overnight. Usually the issue is around enforcement. How do you enforce it? You know, somebody actually have a property management company, and then you go in and say, how many times did you rent this versus how many times did the owner stay there? Well, in this case, you can't buy the underlying lot either. You can only buy time. And so I don't think we will run into a problem where overnight somehow means like only two nights or three nights. In this case, fractional, you know, could end up being 20% of a year. So you end up with 72 nights you could do, but that's still overnight, not permanent home where you live and keep all your things.
Poor choice of words, but I guess it's okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, members, we are in a work session on the bill.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'd move the dash 9 amendments to Senate Bill 3465.
Senator Atkinson, you're moving the dash A9 amendments. I don't think members had those, but we did give a copy, I think, to the staff. So,
Madam Chair,
yes, Senator Burdick.
What's the difference between the A9s and the A12s?
They're totally different. So I'm going to let Senator Atkinson, who made the motion, speak to his motion. I assume you want to describe what amendment you're moving?
Sure. If you want to make your opening comments on 9s, I'd be fine if there's anyone to do that.
Does Erin, do you have a staff
I can give you a quick summary of the dash A9s. The dash A9 amendments keep the current language of the bill. And what they would do is they would allow for a heritage guest ranch, which is a ranch and resort type destination. It combines guest ranch and destination resort features, containing at least 1,000 acres of land and includes such amenities as the golf course. It would be located on land held in common ownership, on zoned for exclusive farm use, at least 70% of which is mapped as eligible for destination resort. The heritage guest ranch development may include up to one unit of residential overnight accommodations, but not limited to single housing. The heritage guest ranch development may include restaurants, meeting and conference facilities, recreational facilities, motor coach resort facilities, golf course, and golf course-related activities. The development of the heritage guest ranch may occur in phases at the discretion of the owner, and at least 25% of the units of the residential and overnight accommodations must be designed to encourage and facilitate use of overnight accommodations. Specifies the size and the square footage for single-family houses, single-family cabins and condominiums, single-family houses, cabins, condominiums, and townhouses. The development must be done in consultation with the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, State Forestry Department. And the heritage guest ranch owner may submit an application to the county for approval of a master plan for development and use of the heritage guest ranch, and the county shall only apply provisions as specified in this measure as to the standards and criteria for approval.
Thank you. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay. Mike, would you please call the roll on the amendment?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
No.
Vice Chair Farioli?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum?
No. Motion fails. Okay. We have the dash A12 amendment.
Madam Chair, as we're in work session, I move to adopt the dash A12 amendments to House Bill 3465.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved the dash A12 amendments to House Bill 3465. Is there a discussion on the amendment? Okay. Mike, would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Farioli?
Yes.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Yes. Amendment carries. And Vice Chair Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move to send House Bill 3465 to the floor to the due path as amended recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 3465 as amended to the floor with the due path recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none. Mike, would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farioli?
Aye.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Motion carries, and the bill moves to the floor. And do we have a volunteer who would like to? Senator Burdick will carry the bill on the floor, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 3465A. Okay. And I see that Senator Johnson has joined us, and so we'll go slightly out of order, and we will move to open a public hearing and work session on HCR 41A. And Erin, if you'd like to briefly tell us about this.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. HCR 41 memorializes Harold J. Snitzer.
Thank you, Erin. And Senator Johnson, if you'd like to come forward, that would be great.
Madam Chair, with your permission, there are a troika.
Great. Well, please bring your friends.
Oh, there is a troika. There are a troika.
This is quite a troika.
You know what?
That's definitely dressed for this committee. This is founding members of this. Great. So welcome to Senate Rules, and please go ahead.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for allowing us to move ahead in the agenda and for hearing from all three of us. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I'm the state senator from District 16. I'm here today with my two colleagues out of respect and affection for a true Oregon icon who has recently passed away, Harold J. Schnitzer, one of the finest gentlemen that I knew. You are going to hear in detail from family members, from a lawyer of almost two decades. I am here to just say of the way that I think all of us think of Oregon, there are people that stand out. There is not a project in Oregon, well, there may be some, but most of the big projects in Oregon that define who we are and what we value have Harold and Arlene and Jordan Schnitzer's fingerprints on them. But as the patriarch of the family, certainly Harold Schnitzer set the gold standard for how Oregonians who have been very fortunate in their own life feel a moral obligation to give back. The Schnitzer story is compelling. It starts in my district with the antecedents of the current Schnitzer family arriving in very modest circumstances, selling scrap that eventually amassed into a substantial personal fortune. And the wonderful part about the Schnitzers is their willingness to give back. There are the great public monuments to the Schnitzer family that we all know well, the Schnitzer Theater, but I think the thing that I'm here to talk about is the manifold acts of private philanthropy, private encouragement, private generosity, where Harold Schnitzer took his formidable business intellect and his human compassion and helped thousands of people we may never know about. This is a remarkable family. We are lucky that they grace our state. We are lucky that they don't just take out their checkbooks. The things that they're heavily involved in, there's a personal connection and a heart connection, and so I am here to urge your favorable action on HCR 41 and an opportunity for this legislative body to pay our formal respects to a great Oregonian. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator Johnson, for bringing it to us.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm not here representing any particular clients today. I'm representing actually family. I'm representing the Schnitzer family, the Goodman family, and the Levin family. The reason I'm representing the family is I'm a member of that family. My wife's father was Harold's youngest brother. Harold was the eighth of nine children, seven of whom lived to adulthood. So my father-in-law was the ninth, basically. Harold's father came to Astoria, basically, ran away from the Russian army around the turn of the century, came to Astoria, and literally started going door-to-door collecting scrap. It's the classic American story of hard work. He basically collected scrap, had a cart. He met a man that had a horse. The man's name was Wolf, and they started a company called Schnitzer Wolf. That company today, the successor of that company, is basically the largest scrap company in the world. Harold left that company in the early 1950s and went into real estate. He was a brilliant mind and an incredibly compassionate person. His mother was actually not the woman who became his mother was actually not supposed to be his mother. His father came over here and sent back to Russia for the woman he was supposed to marry. Communication wasn't all that good back then. She decided he was never going to call for her, so she got married, so they sent her sister. Her sister, Rose, became, in effect, the grandma of the family. Rose Schnitzer was this little bitty thing, and my wife is just like Rose, a little bitty thing. The stuff you see in the resolution is pretty descriptive of his life, but I should tell you that he was raised an Orthodox Jew. There's a Jewish theological tradition, basically. It's called Tikkun Olam, and it basically means repair the world. Basically, what it says is if you are capable, whatever your means are, you have an obligation to try and repair this world. And nobody lived that life better than Harold Schnitzer. Harold, as John will describe, had a philosophy of life that was built around Tikkun Olam and really lived it. The final thing, and I think most of you were here when we had a little battle, I think it was the late 90s, over some low-income housing that John was involved in and I was tangentially involved in, but most of you have already heard the story of Oklahoma City. I'll repeat it just for the record quickly. Basically, Oklahoma City, not only was the federal building destroyed, but an apartment building across the street was destroyed that was owned by Harold. And what Harold did was remove everybody from that apartment building at his expense, put them in housing at his expense, rebuilt the building, and then moved everybody back into that housing. I didn't even know about that until a fellow who represented the beer wholesalers in Oklahoma saw a story in a paper there and sent an email to me with the stories attached saying, aren't you related to this person? He didn't tell anybody when he did things. He just did them because they were the right thing to do. I highly commend this resolution to you, and John has a few other things to say.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a partner at the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine, and I'm here today on my own behalf to celebrate the memory of Harold Schnitzer. I represented Harold Schnitzer as a lawyer and a legislative advocate beginning actually in the mid-90s. Over the years, we worked on significant legislation along with my friend and colleague Paul Romain, most notably a bill in 1989 that required a formal mediation process to emerge and led to a compromise that survives to this day, detailing the relationship between local governments and owners and tenants of Section 8 housing. We worked on a lot of other legislation too, most recently Senate Bill 787, which you just adopted unanimously, which the governor signed last week and will be holding a ceremonial signing for tomorrow. It will require insurers to reimburse for telemedical services provided to patients who suffer from diabetes and will allow those patients from all four corners of our state to have access to the highest quality medical care all through telemedicine. On these and many other assignments, I had the privilege of working quite closely with Harold. He became an inspiration to me. We spoke a great deal about real estate and about business, about his views on how to encourage enterprise, how to accumulate wealth, and what to do with it once one accumulated it. Harold told me that he structured his life in thirds. He said the first third was spent identifying opportunities. The second third was spent amassing all the wealth he could, and the third third was spent giving it all away. That's how Harold Schnitzer led his life. Those of you who have spent any time in the Bay Area may be somewhat conversant with the Claremont Hotel. The Claremont was actually one of Harold's flagship acquisitions early in his real estate career. It was his pride and joy as he rehabilitated this old historic hotel. In 1998, he sold the hotel, and at the time, he received $100 million in proceeds over the sale of that wonderful investment. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, he put 100% of that $100 million into his charitable foundation. That is the kind of person he was. He was a real estate tycoon who treated every person with the utmost courtesy and respect. He had many tenants, and he was among his tenants' best customers. He also knew that his residential tenants were not just renting spaces to sleep and cook. They were renting their homes. One instance in particular made this very clear, and I'd like to elaborate just for a second on what Paul concluded with. On Wednesday, April 21st, 1995, Timothy McVeigh bombed the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City. Jeff Manning, a year later, wrote an article about Harold Schnitzer, which Paul referred to, and with the chair's permission, I just want to quote a very small portion of it. He said, "Ginger London and Brian Brown know they're among the lucky ones. They're still alive. But their Oklahoma City apartment building, a 276-unit Regency Tower, was heavily damaged in the explosion that destroyed the nearby Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building. The stunned Regency Tower residents were given just minutes to leave. Some found themselves on the street in their slippers. but a Portland real estate magnate has made life a little less chaotic for the tower's 350 dispossessed tenants. Harold Schnitzer, Portland-based Harsh Investment Corporation, owns the Regency Tower. At Schnitzer's direction, employees arranged to house all the residency, all of the Regency residents for in two motels. Harsh paid for the rooms and gave every resident meal money. Schnitzer said his company was paying $6,000 a day to house and feed the tenants in Oklahoma City until it was declared a disaster area. Quote, "You've got to take care of people," said Schnitzer, whose company owns hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate throughout the western United States. Quote, "They had no places to go, no clothes, nothing. Good Lord. What were they going to do? Where were they going to go?" Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, things like that define the measure of a person. And it was my pleasure to know well my friend and my client, Harold Schnitzer. I commend to you HCR 41A, and I ask that you refer it to the floor of the Senate with your due pass recommendation.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your comments. Clearly, Harold Schnitzer was a remarkable individual and, I mean, it has a remarkable story, but not one that's totally unique because the contribution of so many immigrant families of that era, you know, who were part of the fabric of life in Oregon is really part of the rich history, I think, of our state and our region. And he's certainly missed, but there's no doubt that not only his memory, but his life's work lives on and on and on and on in buildings, in people's lives, and in so many ways. So it is great to be able to celebrate in this way. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, we are in a work session, and our vice chair has left. So, Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 41 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Beyer has moved HCR 41 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Motion carries. And I think we'll ask Senator Johnson and Senator Atkinson to co-carry this if they would like on the floor.
I'd be honored. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And I'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 41. And I think now we will go back to where we left off, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 395A. And we'll give you a moment to shuffle her papers and us to do the same, and then tell us about the amendment.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 395A clarifies that felony driving under the influence is a Category 6 on the sentencing guidelines grid, which carries a presumptive sentence of 12 to 14 months. The Dash A form amendment allows the state to reimburse counties for incarceration for those charged with and convicted of driving under the influence for a third time, directs counties to use existing reimbursement rate used to reimburse counties for cost of incarcerating persons serving 12 months or less, directs Department of Corrections to make rules for counties to seek reimbursement, requires reimbursements to be made from monies appropriated to the department for that purpose, declares emergency is effective upon passage. We did receive a no revenue impact on the Dash A4 amendment. We did receive a fiscal impact statement on the Dash A4 amendment.
Thank you, Erin. So, members, I think you can see what this version of Senate Bill 395 does. It has been, I think, negotiated over some period of time and carefully crafted to ensure that the provisions of this voter-approved initiative are implemented in a way that's effective and as cost-efficient as possible, and that's the intention. And I think you see the analysis from LRO and from fiscal is here. So, members, we do not have anybody signed up, and we are in a work session. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash A4 amendment to Senate Bill 395.
Thank you. Senator Beyer has moved the Dash A4 amendments to Senate Bill 395A. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection? Seeing that amendment is adopted. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 395A to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Beyer moves Senate Bill 395A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we do need a carrier for this on the floor. Yeah, why don't we ask Senator Przanski if he'd like to carry this on the floor.
Wonderful idea.
He needs something to do. So. Okay, great. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 395A. Okay, now we'll go to a group of resolutions that we have. And I think we were expecting Representative Olson to join us. Do we need to call him?
We're going to give him a call, but we can do this one.
Okay.
That's not part of his package.
Sure. So let's start by opening a public hearing and work session on HCR 39.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 39 memorializes former Speaker of the Oregon House of Representatives and former U.S. Congressman Robert Duncan, 1920 to 2011.
Okay, and I don't think we had anybody to speak on this one, so we are in a work session. Senator Beyer?
Madam Chair,
Senator Atkinson.
On behalf of Senator Beyer, I would move that HCR 39 be adopted with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved HCR 39 to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And I'm not sure if there's anyone here who actually knew Bob Duncan, but we certainly can.
I'd be happy.
Take a carrier. Volunteer. Senator Atkinson will carry this on the floor, and I'll close the work session on HCR 39. And
Mike is on the phone with his office, right? Probably not coming.
Okay. Then it looks like we will just move into work session on the other HCRs that we have, and I can open them concurrently, right? So I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on HCR 26, HCR 29, HCR 31, HCR 32, and HCR 33. And Erin, would you like to tell us about these?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The series of resolutions before you come and are sponsored by Representative Olson. They are all former members of the Oregon State Police, and they go along with a series of ones we had last week. I will just briefly identify who each one is. HCR 26 recognizes and honors Oregon State Police Sergeant Robert Schuling. HCR 29 recognizes and honors Oregon State Police Trooper Scott Lyons. HCR 31 recognizes and honors Oregon State Police Sergeant James Richter. HCR 32 recognizes and honors Oregon State Police Trooper Dan Nelson. And HCR 33 recognizes and honors Oregon State Police Superintendent Holly Holcomb.
Hmm.
Yes.
Separate motions, correct?
Do we need separate motions or can we move them on block?
You can move them on block and we can send them out in separate motions.
No, we'll do it on block.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would move that HCR 26, 29, 31, 32, 33 be moved to the Senate floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Beyer has moved HCRs 26, 29, 31, 32, and 33 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And I think I'll just assign these to myself for the moment, and then we can sort out who would be the appropriate carriers based on the geographic area that people come from. And so, members, just to let you know, we do expect we will meet again, but at this point we're not sure exactly the time. So we'll be coordinating with your staff and making sure that you are aware of and as far advanced as possible of what and when and why and how. So with nothing further to come before us today, but before I adjourn, I just wanted to mention that seated at my left at the audience's right is a young woman named Haley Johnson, who is here with Senator Atkinson as his intern for the day, and I believe she's from McMinnville. Is that right? And I'm not sure who your friend is, Senator Burdick.
He's my friend, too, Madam Chair. He's Jack Anderson, and he's also from the same high school.
Great.
He's on the floor today.
Wonderful.
And he's going to be helping my office with its mountains of paperwork and other issues until we sign the dot.
That's great. So Haley and Jack, we're really glad to have you here today. I bet you're glad to be out of school and to be able to see your government at work. So it's great to have you. Thanks a lot. And with nothing further to come before us, we are adjourned.